Nehemiah chapter 1, verse 4, we read, "It came to pass, when I heard these words, that I sat down and wept, and mourned certain days, and fasted, and prayed before the God of heaven." As you enter this book, you are confronted by a broken-hearted man. Nehemiah was now located in the palace in Shushan in Persia, some 800 miles from his people in Jerusalem. But whilst Nehemiah was separated from his people by distance, they were not separated in feelings. Nehemiah's heart was taken up with his people living amongst the wreckage and ruin of Jerusalem. Nehemiah was in Shushan in the palace. And Shushan in that time, it was a very, very important city. It was the capital of the empire of its time, the Medo-Persian Empire. Now, just to put that into perspective for you, it was a little bit like a city like London or Washington or Paris today. It was a very, very major city. All major decisions came through Shushan and through the lips of Nehemiah. Remember Nehemiah's occupation. We saw last week that he was the cupbearer to the king. And this was a very, very important position. It was a position of authority, of fidelity, of reliability, of intimacy with the king. But remember who Nehemiah was working for. He was working for King Artaxerxes, the king in the palace in Shushan. He was working for a pagan king, a Persian king, a very, very powerful king indeed. A king with tremendous weight, clout, and authority. And now Nehemiah, he's in the palace and he has just heard of the affliction of his people. And his reaction here in verse 4 gives us the first glimpse into the heart of Nehemiah, the author of this book. When Nehemiah heard the words of verse 3, "The remnant that are left of the captivity there in the province are in great affliction and reproach. The wall of Jerusalem is broken down. The gates are burned with fire." When he heard these words, when he heard the report of Hananiah and his brethren, how was it that Nehemiah reacted? Well, verse 4, the verse we're going to consider today, it shows us how Nehemiah reacted. We read there, "When I heard these words, that I sat down and wept, and mourned certain days, and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven." And rather than having his head turned by elevated occupation, Nehemiah, he had a tender heart. When he heard of the plight of his people, he was brokenhearted. He was a brokenhearted man. And his immediate reaction was to burst forth into prayer and to pray on behalf of his people. And in the building business of God's kingdom, whilst God requires ready hands, he also requires broken and tender hearts. He needs those who have a tender heart for his glory. I know as we look around today and we see a similar situation like Nehemiah faced, we do say that the walls have been broken down. The gates have been burned with fire today in Christendom. It's so easy to become critical. It's so easy to turn our nose up at the situation. So easy to develop a cynical and a critical attitude. But that's not the attitude of Nehemiah. And neither should that be our attitude. Our attitude should be like Nehemiah. Our attitude should be that of a tenderness towards the need of those around us. Indeed, in 2 Kings 22, "You meet a king with a soft heart. Young Josiah was brought the book of the law. And there when he read the book of the law and he understood the coming destruction of Jerusalem," you read in 2 Kings 22 and verse 19, "Because thine heart was tender and thou hast humbled thyself before the Lord, when thou heardest what I spake against this place, that they should become a desolation and a curse, I also have heard thee, saith the Lord." And again we find young Josiah, the young king, as he was brought the law of God. We find there he read that law and he understood that Jerusalem was going to be destroyed. And how did Josiah respond to that? Well, we're told here that God said about Josiah's heart that his heart was tender. He had a tender heart when he heard of the destruction of Jerusalem. And whilst at times God's work requires firmness, it also requires tenderness. It requires us and it requires you to have that tender-hearted spirit. Just like Nehemiah. Just like Nehemiah, he just sat down, took it all in. And he wept when he thought about the plight of his people. Oh, have you that tender heart? Have you that tender heart today? That heart that breaks when you look around and you see the destruction, you see the desolation around you, when you see the depravity. Do you have that breaking heart? That heart that breaks for the souls of men and women. Nehemiah had a tender heart. And here I want us to think in our second study on this book, I want you to think about the subject building from the knees up. Building from the knees up. Because before Nehemiah ever went and built the walls of Jerusalem, he comes here on his knees and he comes to the God of heaven. In verse 4, we have how he prayed. And then in verses 5 through to 11, rather, we have what he prayed. And so this morning I want to look at building from the knees up and particularly how Nehemiah prayed. And next week, God willing, I want to look at what he prayed. What did he actually pray as he came to prayer before God? So let's look at building from the knees up how Nehemiah prayed. Notice firstly here his identification. Identification. Verse 4, we read, it came to pass when I heard these words that I sat down and wept. By identification, I simply mean that he identified with his fellow countrymen. Verse 3, he was told the remnant that are left of the captivity there in the province are in great affliction. The word affliction there in this book of Nehemiah, it's elsewhere translated as sad and also as distress. God's people, they were extremely saddened. They were extremely distressed because of what had happened to the walls. They had no walls and the house of God was lying wide open and the enemy was rampant. It was simply walking in the front door of Jerusalem. And Nehemiah here, when he heard this, he didn't shrug it off. He didn't simply distance himself from the problem. No, he could have done this. Remember how we learned last week that he was born in Persia and he was raised in Persia. He was a Persian by birth. He also lived 800 miles from Jerusalem. He had a very, very good job. He had a comfortable life. He was the king's right-hand man. He could have easily distanced himself from this problem. But he didn't. He didn't. He immediately identified himself with this people. He was moved by their affliction. You see, before we will ever have a burden to pray for sinners, we must firstly identify with sinners. In seeing the need and feeling the need, you will then be driven to pray about that need. Oh, it's so easy to become cold, to become callous, to become indifferent. When we look around and we hear and we see what is happening in society, it's so easy to just shrug it off and not to feel ourselves to be part of it. To just simply distance ourselves from the plight of man. But if you never see the need and you never feel the need, then you will never be burdened to pray for that need. There's no greater example of identifying with man than the Lord Jesus Christ. You think of how he identified with our humanity. He left heaven, took upon himself the form of a human being, and he identified with and met the needs of men. Remember, Christ was and is God. He came, however, and he suffered the frailties, the limitations of human beings. He completely identified with sinners. And in identifying with sinners, with lost, fallen men, I believe that's why he could pray so passionately and pray so fervently. You not remember as he looked over Jerusalem. And we read in Matthew 23, verse 37, O Jerusalem, Jerusalem, Thou that killest the prophets, and stonest them which are sent unto thee, how often would I have gathered thy children together, as a hen gathereth her chickens under her wings. But ye would not. Ye would not. You see, his identification with fallen man led to fervent supplication on behalf of fallen men. You see, identification with men will lead to intercession for men. When you see, sense, and sympathize with men, then like Nehemiah, your first reaction will just simply be to burst forth in prayer. When you think and you think of their lost condition, think about the fact that if an individual is not saved, that they're bound for hell because of their sin, then you will but find that spirit that will rise up within you and say, I must pray for them. There must be something in within me that pushes me forward to reach them, to pray for them, to supplicate the throne of God on their behalf. Oh, do you have that spirit of identification? Do you see the needs of others and do you enter into their needs? Enter into their sorrows, their sufferings. Because this is the first step to drive you to your knees. Before Robert Murray McShane was a minister in Dundee, after he finished Bible college at just age 22, he served as an assistant to John Bonner for 3 years. He went to Falkirk and he ministered in two little villages, Dunipace and Larbert. And he recorded in his diary about his time there as he just went to Larbert and Dunipace, as he had come originally from Edinburgh. When he read, what an interest I feel in Larbert and Dunipace. It's like the land of my birth. Will the Son of Righteousness ever rise upon it? And even though he was born in the city of Edinburgh, when the Lord planted him in Falkirk, oh, he had a great burden for that place. He felt as if he had been born there. He felt as if he was one of them. He identified with those people, and then that drove him to prayer. Oh, have you that spirit of identification? Do you see the needs of others? And say, oh God, give me some gumption within. Help me to do something for them, Lord. Help me to pray for them. Give me that burden, that passion to pray. His identification. Notice secondly here, his contemplation. Contemplation, verse 4, we read, it came to pass when I heard these words that I sat down. As soon as he heard the plight of the people, before he ever went and prayed for them, and before he went to Jerusalem to build the walls there, we're told there that he just sat down. He sat down. He took that moment just wherever he was in the palace. Maybe he found a quiet room. We can't be too sure where he sat down. But he just took that moment, that time of quietness, just to digest what he had heard. Nehemiah had probably assumed that all was going well after all. We remember, as we learned last week, Ezra the scribe had been there for some 13 years now. Nehemiah probably thought to himself, well, they're getting on well. Perhaps the walls are now fully built. They're maybe well underway. And whenever Nehemiah was told that the walls were burnt down and the gates were broken with fire, and he had just received this bombshell, and this news hit him, he was absolutely speechless. And so what did he do? He just sat down in quiet contemplation. He sat down and contemplated the plight of his people. You see, if you're ever to pray about the need truly, you must firstly feel the need. If you are to feel that need, there must be that sitting down, that contemplation of what's going on around you. Oh, today where society tells us to be so busy, and sometimes we are so busy that we never take that time just to sit down, to contemplate, to meditate, to think about the needs of those around us, to think about the needs of God's work and Christ's kingdom. And if you will ever have that burden to pray, sometimes it's just good to sit down and think, to stop, to pause, to ponder, and to contemplate what is going on around you. You remember the story of Isaac, How Abraham sent his servant to Mesopotamia to find a wife for his son Isaac. And after he had been there and he had went and found Isaac's wife, what was Isaac doing? Well, in Genesis 24, verse 63, we read, Isaac went out to meditate in the field at eventide. And he lifted up his eyes and saw, and behold, the camels were coming. And just as Eliezer, the servant of Abraham, was coming back with good news from a far country, what was Isaac doing? He was meditating. We're told there he was out in the field. It was at eventide, probably finished his day's work. And he was just out in the field, taking that quiet time, contemplating what was about to happen. The best type of intercession is often preceded by contemplation. Often it's best to think before you pray. Sometimes you just rush into prayer, you pray and you don't really think about what you're going to pray for. And sometimes it's just good to sit down and to think, well, Lord, what would you have me to specifically pray about today? It's good to take that time sometimes just to contemplate the needs of those around, their spiritual need, their moral need, their eternal need. And whenever you get a grasp of what's going on, then you will be much more effective and much more fervent in prayer. Someone has said, before you act, listen. Before you react, think. Before you spend, earn. Before you quit, try. And before you pray, think. I think that's very good advice. Before we pray, think. Just sit and think about what you're going to pray about. Nehemiah did this. He sat down. He just sat down. Found a quiet spot in the palace and sat down and thought about what he had heard. Identification, contemplation. Notice thirdly here, in thinking about building from the knees up, notice his emotion. In verse 4, we read, it came to pass when I heard these words that I sat down and wept and mourned certain days and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. It's easy to see the emotion here that Nehemiah had as he was about to go into prayer. Nehemiah, as he sat down, contemplated what he had just heard. It evidently had an effect upon him. We're told here that he wept and mourned certain days. Now, we're not told specifically how long before he prayed or how long this certain days actually refers to, but it obviously lasted some time. If you look at verse 1 of chapter 1, it refers to the month Chislu. But if you look at chapter 2 and verse 1, you read there that it is the month Nisan. Chislu refers to our equivalent of November, whilst the month Nisan refers to our month March or April, the equivalent of our calendar today. And it seems that Nehemiah here, when he heard about the need, and he heard about the plight of Jerusalem, he didn't just sit down and have a momentary cry. No, it evidently affected him for months upon end. He sat down and he wept. And he wept continuously about the need of Jerusalem. He prayed with tremendous emotion and passion on behalf of his people. You see, contemplation before prayer will sometimes lead to emotion in prayer. When you sit down and think about the needs of men, the plights of men, their sinfulness, their corruption, sometimes it will affect you emotionally. It's not a bad thing at times when you get burdened in prayer just to come before God and to emotionally pray. Now, I'm not suggesting that you need to work it up. It's something that the Holy Spirit must do. We're not to pray with crocodile tears, so to speak. But at the same time, Nehemiah is showing here that it's not wrong at times to pray and to pray with tears. It's not wrong to be moved emotionally when we think about the needs of the work of God and Christ around us. Isaiah 22, verse 4, we read there that Isaiah had just been foretold or been told about the invasion of Jerusalem. And he said, therefore, said I, look away from me. I will weep bitterly. Labour not to comfort me because of the spoiling of the daughter of my people. And as he was told here of the invasion of Judah, he had to tell those around him, look away from me. It's affecting me. It affected him to the point of crying. And whilst emotion in prayer is condoned by the world, it is commended by God. It is a good thing to weep before God on behalf of sinful, fallen men. God delights to see you approach him and to pour out your heart and soul to him, praying fervently, passionately, even praying emotionally on behalf of others. Oh, has there been times in your life where you have so thought about the needs of others, so thought about the lost and their lostness, that you cannot help but weep, that you have spent that time weeping before the throne of God? David Brainerd was a missionary to Indians in America, and one day he went out into the garden and he saw the smoke of the little Indian villages, and it was winter time, but he just got down behind a wall that he had in his garden and he began to pray. And he was praying so emotionally, so fervently, that snow began to fall. But he was so taken up in prayer, he didn't even notice the snow falling. And when he got up in prayer, he could see his own statue, because he had sweated so much, and he could see his own imprint in the snow. He was praying so passionately that the snow melted around him. Now again, it's something that we can't work up. Let me stress that. We cannot work this up. But at the same time, is it not something that perhaps is missing from our prayer lives? The spirit of sitting down, contemplation, and then bursting forth into prayer emotionally. His identification, his contemplation, his emotion. Notice fourthly here his abstention. His abstention. Verse 4, we read, it came to pass when I heard these words that I sat down and wept and mourned certain days and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. Nehemiah, as he prayed, his praying was accompanied by many things. It was accompanied by that spirit of contemplation, that spirit of emotion. But he also abstained from certain things whilst he prayed. We're not exactly told what he abstained from as he fasted here. It probably was food, but we can't be too sure. But the point is that he did fast whilst he prayed. Now, fasting in the Bible speaks of self-denial. Self-denial. And Nehemiah here, he's showing that spirit of self-denial. He's showing that he has that spiritual seriousness about him. He's now going to set himself to prayer, and he's going to abstain from food. He meant business with God, and so he purposefully fasted so that he could pray seriously for Jerusalem. And seeking God for his cause is not to be done flippantly. It is to be done seriously. God wants you to be serious when you seek his face in prayer. I'm not saying that you should be like Nehemiah and abstain from food or abstain from certain things. But at the same time in prayer, there needs to be seriousness. There needs to be that sobriety. There needs to be that weightiness, that earnestness, that solemnity as we come to God in prayer. Like the child comes to his father, and he comes with that seriousness, almost demanding things from his father. Oh, we need to have that seriousness about us. I wonder if you that seriousness. As you come to the Lord, are you saying, oh God, come and bless me. Come and give me that burden. Burden me for the work of God. Burden me for the souls of men. Have you that spirit of seriousness about your praying? Just like Nehemiah, setting yourself to prayer. Saying, oh God, come and speak to me. And then in 1 Peter 4 verse 7, we read, but the end of all things is at hand. Be therefore sober and watch unto prayer. Of course, sober here, it means self-controlled. And it has the idea of seriousness. We use the word today, being sober, to speak of someone who doesn't drink alcohol, someone who is sober. And of course, someone who is under the influence of alcohol, they cannot control themselves. And so to be sober means that you are to control yourself. There is to be that seriousness about you. You see, in prayer, rather than being light-hearted, The Lord wants you to be soberly minded, to have that soberness, that seriousness, that you set yourself to prayer. As Nehemiah fasted and denied himself, oh, have you that spirit of self-denial? As you come to prayer, you go into his head, it doesn't matter about all the other things. Oh God, give me that sobriety. Help me to lay hold upon thy throne. And oh God, not to let go until you come and burden my heart for the needs of Christ's work. This is the type of spirit that Nehemiah had. This is how he's preparing himself to prayer. His identification, his contemplation, his emotion, his abstention. Notice lastly here his recognition. In verse 4 we read, it came to pass when I heard these words that I sat down and wept and mourned certain days and fasted and prayed before the God of heaven. In the original Hebrew, this phrase, the God of heaven, it actually reveals itself to be of Persian origin. Nehemiah was born in Persia, and now we find him using the language of the Persians. And as calling him the God of heaven, it was a term used by the Persians, which was the equivalent of the Jewish Yahweh. In other words, one supreme being who is the creator of everything. It shows God as sovereign over his creation and his creatures. One who absolutely rules from heaven. Nehemiah recognized who he was praying to. He was praying to the God of heaven. He was praying to one who was in control. One who, as he prayed, would come and sort all things out. And would reveal himself in his purposes for his people. You see, whilst you are a mere creature, God is the only creator. Whilst you move around in earth, God is the one who moves things upon earth. And in prayer, as you seek God's face, as you seek his favor, as you seek his faithfulness, remember who you're praying to. That you're not just praying to some earthly being, nor to some angelic being. You're praying to the supreme being. You're praying to God, the God of heaven, the one who sovereignly rules and sovereignly reigns, and one who can change things and build his kingdom in an instant. Oh, remember that when you pray, that God's in control, that he is the sovereign, that he is the one who will orchestrate things after the counsel of his own purposes. Robert Murray McShane's first sphere of labour, where he went to in Falkirk, it was well known for the iron industry. It made cannon barrels, actually, for the Battle of Waterloo. And as he was praying one day in his study, as he thought about going out to do his visits, McShane, he prayed like this. He said, trying to break this northern iron, Lord, bless the words of feebleness. Make them words of power. Work thou, and thine be the praise. And he realized that the people he was ministering to, they were just as tough as iron. As tough as iron. But he also realized that he was coming to one who could take his words and make them words of power. And whenever he did that, the glory would be God's. Building from the knees up, how Nehemiah prayed. And oh, how Nehemiah prayed. How he prayed with such fervency. As he heard of their affliction, as he sat down and wept, and mourned certain days, and fasted, and prayed before the God of heaven. May God give us this spirit as we come to him in prayer, and seek his face for his blessing upon his work. May God bless his word to your souls this morning.